WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's not just the Bush administration that's working on the White House transition. Satirist Harry Shearer is making the transition, too. We invited him for a look back at the Clinton administration and a look ahead to George W. Bush. Shearer's satires are heard on his nationally broadcast radio program, Le Show, and have been featured on All Things Considered. He's also an actor, a former cast member at Saturday Night Live, and he does a lot of the voices on The Simpsons. Before we talk, let's hear a sketch he did on the latest edition of Le Show.
Clinton something.
This is my health task force stuff, Betty.
I knew it.
Well, this goes over to my Senate office.
Is that okay with you, Mr. President?
Oh, sure, Betty. I can't take all this crap to my library.
No, sir.
Well, Mr. President, you've had yourself a pretty damn good farewell tour.
Yeah. No shuck, man. I've had a better farewell tour than the Beatles ever had.
They never had one.
That's what I mean. Come on, I don't have a lot of time left to sit at this desk.
Goes by quick, doesn't it? Quicker than a gator's apology. Quicker than a nutria's heartbeat.
Yeah, James, it goes by quickly.
Yeah.
Man, it's been amazing.
If you had it to do all over again...
What, are you kidding?
Well, it's made you a white-haired old fart before your time.
Yeah, sure, but come on, I got to do a lot of good for the American people.
Yeah, well...
And if you believe this week's rumors, I might do a cameo in a James Bond film.
Yeah, I saw that. Is that...
Hey, once I don't have to worry about upholding the dignity of the office, you never know. Anyway, pretty good for a kid from Hot Springs.
Hope.
Yeah, right.
Yes, I'll go to the first 2 hours of the hearing, then I'll do the press avail. Well, the statement has no credibility if I deliver it before going to the hearing. Okay, then the lunch. Okay, right. Thanks.
I am going to miss being that kind of busy.
Oh, sure. Hard to get the old adrenals pumping out on the 14th hole.
Well, see, James, being the youngest has always been my blessing and my curse.
Uh-huh.
I mean... If I'd taken office at the age I am now, my appetites would already have been curbed. On the other hand, I did have the energy to pull all-nighters with Yasser Arafat.
Hey, listen, you could do a lot worse than going down in history as the first American president to have a midlife crisis while in office.
Well, you know, at least I didn't paint Air Force One red and take the top off it.
Bill, can you make a Senate spouse's tea a week from Thursday?
Only if Adassa Lieberman is there. Man, she is hot. Just kidding, huh?
Mm-hmm. Great.
You guys okay?
Oh, we're fine. So, Elvis is leaving the building.
Hey, Mr. President.
Al, it's been a little while.
Yeah, well, you know, I needed some time for healing.
Hey, we all needed a little healing.
Uh-huh. Are you healed?
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, listen.
Yeah.
You did what you thought you had to do, you know? You were wrong, but you did what you had to do.
Hey, look, I won the popular vote.
Hey, pal, all I know is Ricky friggin' Martin is playing the inaugural, you know? What kind of middle-of-the-road soulless crap is that?
Tell the vice president I said hi.
James sent his regards.
Oh, hey, tell him I am so sorry.
Okay. Sorry about what?
Well, if I'd have won, his wife wouldn't have been appointed a counselor to the vice president.
Yeah.
He'd still have that odd couple act with her.
Al says he's sorry he broke up your act.
Yeah, that's okay, sir. I didn't need to be on Meet the Press. I can always go run another Israeli election.
So, Al, look, we're going to have a little farewell party Friday night, but I know you're probably busy moving out of your residence, so...
Well, actually, sir, we're all packed, as a matter of fact. I'm sitting on a cardboard box full of my winter clothes right now because the furniture is gone.
No. Well, it's kind of too late to change the guest list, Al, but I'm sure we'll see you shortly after GW puts his hand on the Bible.
Yeah, I'll be the guy at the Ritz-Carlton throwing up into the bidet.
Bill?
Yeah?
You want to keep this box of cigars?
Well, I don't smoke them anymore.
So to speak.
So, yeah. But, I guess we should keep them.
Yeah, that's what I figured. If you're indicted, they're evidence. Okay, just checking.
Sometimes she acts as if her billing records don't stink. Anyway, look, Al, it's been a great 8 years.
Well, Mr. President, as the Fleetwood Mac song had it way back then, let's don't stop thinking about tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as the Mac sang at my farewell concert, you can go your own way.
Uh-huh. Well, tell James I'm sorry.
He's sorry again.
Hey, no problem. Who knows? I could get back in the game just by having a little thing with Laura Ingram, you know. It's one foxy right winger.
He says thanks.
Okay, well, good luck with the houses.
Oh, thank you. Good luck with the life.
You know, I...
You know something, James?
What's that, sir?
I can probably take being the third wheel on Hillary's motorcycle for a little while, as long as...
Yeah?
As long as I don't have to take his calls anymore. Come on. Voters are paying for the dish. Let's watch Razorback Hoops one more time.
A sketch from satirist Harry Shearer's nationally broadcast public radio program, The Show. I spoke with him yesterday. In these final moments of the Clinton presidency, I should ask you what you finally came to think of Clinton as a man, as a president, and as a subject of satire.
As a subject of satire, he was unmatchable. You know, at the end of every administration, people always say to somebody in my line of work, well, what are you going to do now? Especially after Reagan, people are going, oh, boy, I feel sorry for you. But Clinton was a great, great subject for satire because he had so many facets to him. He was brilliant and stupid. He was grand and petty. He could empathize with so many different kinds of people, and he could barely understand his own emotions or those of the people closest to him. It unraveling a person with that many contradictions took a while longer than figuring out a character comparatively much more simple like Ronald Reagan. But when you finally started learning who this guy really was, I just thought he was unmatchable because you could just write him in so many different situations and let him surprise you because he had all these different weird and contradictory qualities to him. Now, as a citizen, one has to say one wishes that people gifted with such intellect would have a little more understanding of the political rules of their particular era. You know, it's one thing to fancy yourself the inheritor of the legacy of John F. Kennedy. It's another to forget that the rules have changed and the press doesn't protect the personal proclivities of the president anymore. And, you know, that one little detail sabotaged probably most of his second term. So as a citizen, you're sort of wondering, well, why didn't he get that? He got all his subtleties about how you need to deal with the Russians, but he didn't get that the press wouldn't keep this kind of thing a secret, although it kept John F. Kennedy's affair with an East German spy a secret. Well, that's information that he clearly had in him and didn't quite make the synapses work in that regard. So, you know, I guess there's a bittersweet quality to looking at him because there's a disappointment that he couldn't be all that he had the potential to be. On the other hand, I think that there's a certain Jeffersonian sense in which any limitation on a president is to be welcomed. You know, it's, if they don't stop themselves, we have to.
Now, President Clinton was very Hollywood connected. Who are George W.'s connections in Hollywood? You live in L.A. I imagine you have a sense of this.
Well, I mean, obviously it's the Schwarzenegger coterie, and you know they like to talk about the fact that they're, you know, Hollywood is basically a liberal town, but there are a lot of conservative people both in front of and behind the scenes. I have a very good friend who's a writer producer who used to. Run Cheers, as a matter of fact, who's a major conservative, and he might be too conservative for George W. He might be too conservative to be part of George W.'s Hollywood coterie. But I think when you see guys playing action figure, Bruce Willis, when you see guys playing action figures or cops in the Hollywood work, chances are good they're Republicans.
What will you and won't you miss about Clinton-era entertainment?
You mean the people who were connected to him?
Exactly.
The entertainment that grew out of him?
No, the people who were connected to him.
Well, I mean, maybe this time we've seen a Streisand farewell concert that really means goodbye. You know, if Gore had won, I don't think we could say that with such confidence. You know, I guess Delta Burke won't have a new series on CBS very soon. I don't know. I don't think that, you know, the one piece of entertainment that really provably grew out of fascination with Clinton was the West Wing. I don't think that show would have happened had we not had that year-long walk through the Oval Office and its adjoining little room that made that a spot that was plausibly tinged with dramatic possibilities. And I have to say, I'm not a big fan of political fiction of that sort, because we live in an era where the real stuff is so rich and meaty, you should pardon me, that it seems a waste of time and effort to learn the names of fictional characters when we could be learning more about the real people who actually have the guns.
My guest is satirist and actor Harry Shearer. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Satirist Harry Shearer is my guest. What are you looking forward to in the inauguration?
Ricky Martin. I think it's the return to a sort of, I guess, after having looked at the sneaks of Laura Bush's inaugural day wardrobe designs, I'm looking forward to the return of what you might call petroleum club chic.
Is there a department for? Is there a place for that in the department stores?
I think Neiman's has a, you know, on an upper floor where you need a special key to run the elevator to get up there.
So tell me more what Ricky Martin's appearance signifies to you.
Well, it's diversity. It's reaching out. It's se hablo española. It's all of that. It's. Obviously, you know, one of the most popular figures in American pop music right now. My favorite story regarding that is his songwriting partner, whose name I forget, who issued a public statement expressing disappointment that Ricky Martin was entertaining at the Bush inaugural. But, you know, you look for those, you remember that Jimmy Carter sort of sent a signal with his inauguration when he walked up I guess it was Pennsylvania Avenue, rather than riding in the car, you know, I'm a man of the people, that sort of signal. If that's the signal he was sending, then, you know, I think we're already getting word that this will be the most highly security, the most intense security presence at any inauguration. So it wouldn't surprise me if we never really catch a sight of GW until he hits the platform.
Harry, have you been watching a lot of CNN and MSNBC?
Yes, I have. I'm the one. As their ratings decline, they can count on me. So I wouldn't be surprised if in about 3 or 4 weeks, when the bottom really falls out, they'll start addressing me by name. Harry, what we have coming up in the next half hour?
You know what I find funny? You know, Mary Matlin left her show on CNN to join the White House staff, and she is replaced by Linda Chavez now that Chavez has had to withdraw her nomination.
Well, for anybody who doesn't understand the concept of the revolving door in Washington, there it is. In sharp contrast and demonstrated and dramatized completely by women, which is progress.
How emotionally involved did you get with the Florida recount?
Emotionally, I didn't get emotionally involved except to say that I was absolutely throbbing and vibrating with every move of the story. I mean, I was totally sucked into it. I love those little moments where areas of American life that normally go on behind either closed doors or just outside of public ken are suddenly opened up to this stunning glare of the all-new spotlight. And we you know, in the same way that during the early stages of Monica Gate, to me, the most stunning fact that was coming out as people were looking at the practices of the Ken Starr office were people saying, well, you know, this is how prosecutors work in this country every day. And I thought that was a lead that was never quite picked up. You know, that was a door that was almost opened. Anyway, in this case, we had, you know, we got to see what the reality behind every vote counts really means. You know, how votes. I mean, they didn't invent hanging chads and dimple chads and all that stuff in Florida. They didn't invent looking at those ballots with weird-looking magnifying glasses. It's just this is the first time we'd all seen it, and I thought it was fabulous. You know, that to have some degree of understanding of the flaws and frailties and wackinesses of our system is, I do think, a gift. And also, after we'd had this year-long campaign that was so incredibly bland and so desiccated, to see finally the reality of the lust for power on both sides, the fangs and claws coming out, revealed, it was like this billion-dollar curtain of blandness had suddenly tumbled down from the stage, and we were seeing the real-life drama backstage of these two guys who basically wanted to be president, and that was the only issue involved, is me. I loved it.
Harry, do you have a favorite Inauguration Day memory?
Yeah, I guess JFK. I was a kid, and I thought that even though none of us dreamed that some of the clues that were dropped in the inauguration speech meant that in a couple of short years, the hind ends of us or those we knew and loved would be on the line to go to Vietnam. But there was the idea that after the blandness and sort of lack of familiarity with the power of the English language of Eisenhower, you got this guy who could speak in these fairly graceful cadences, and probably the last American president to make a plausible call for sacrifice on the part of the citizens for the sake of the country, without it sounding hollow. And I thought one of the criticisms I had of Bill Clinton is that the Republicans had a lot of great spokesmen who made very effective cases for individualism and for de-emphasizing the role of government. And that's a natural tendency in this country anyway. We're an anti-government country. And that Clinton had at least the rhetorical skills to make the case for community and for government as an agent of community to do the things that only community can do. And he rarely did it. And of course, the time that he chose to do it, or the time that he chose to do most of that, was in his farewell appearances, where he started talking about, hey, you know, we're imprisoning too many people on drugs. And you just think, you had 8 years to do something about this. Now you tell me. But I thought the Kennedy inauguration still is the most vivid in my memory.
You going to be watching on TV on Saturday?
Oh, you bet.
Okay. Well, Harry, thanks so much for talking with us.
Terry, it's always a pleasure.
Satirist Harry Shearer is the host of the public radio program Le Show. He's appeared in many movies and does many of the voices on The Simpsons. This is Fresh Air.